Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you on Friday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, and you. Big thanks to Danny and Colton for rocking Hail Varsity yesterday. Had some family stuff rocking with junior and fifth grade and friends that have been there from day one, from kindergarten now through fifth grade. And we had a house full. It was a good time. We were all shocked that Golden State did something to their bed again. We'll get into that. We'll talk some recruiting. Greg Smith going to be with us, recruiting analyst with HailVarsity.com and Magazine. We'll talk to Greg in 15 minutes. We'll dive into who are some of the coaches you believe, and it can be across all sports, are overrated. Danny and I were texting last night, and he's like, dude, what's up with Kerr? So we'll get into that. Bill Dolman next hour. Cedric Golden, Austin American statesman. We'll talk some NBA. We will have the Friday forecast return to action with an important game six tonight. Cleveland-Boston, a monster game six Monday with Houston and Golden State. You can tap the line. Schillingbridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-3776. 466-3776. 1-800-825-5865. You can find us on Twitter at Danny Burke 5, at Schmidt underscore radio, or at Hail Varsity. Email us, Chris at HailVarsity.com. I know you guys touched on it yesterday. The unders, the overs, the lines that are out for some of Nebraska's big games this year. I want to comment on that in a second. I do want to say, and this has been reported by the World Herald, the Journal Star, I'm pretty sure Hail Varsity will have something on it as well. But I know you talked about it last Friday. Frank Solich, the idea of him coming back to Nebraska, that Bill Dolman was tremendous on that. We hit on it a bit Saturday, but now it's official that Frank Solich, Nebraska's coach from 98 through 03, a standout here at Nebraska as an assistant for decades and a great player here at Nebraska early on for Devaney, he will return to Nebraska for the Outland Award dinner in January. What happens in January? Typically, you have the Outland Award dinner up in Omaha. Phenomenal event. Great people. They have insanely talented former guest speakers. Lou Holtz, Bobby Bowden, you name it. They've had some big-time people. And the want-to, I think, from Coach Osborne and Coach Solich really helped make this happen. The Osborne Legacy Award is going to be what is handed out, awarded to Solich. It's the fifth annual one. So it's long overdue to have Frank back in the state. Frank has been back in the state recruiting, obviously. But as a Nebraska fan, I think you have moved on from giving him all of the blame for the shortcomings as to what happened post-Osborne. Things weren't going to maintain at that level, but he maintained Nebraska football at a very, very high level, between 9 and 10 wins, that you would absolutely give your left arm for, because you're coming off 4-8. It's been 5-7. It's been 6-7. It's been bad. It's not just been bad, but it's been embarrassing. And while Frank got blown out a few times, those guys played hard for him, and he wasn't standing pat, arms folded. This is how it's going to – he was trying to fix things. Things changed. It is what it is. I'm glad Frank Solich is coming back in Omaha to the Outland Trophy Award dinner in Omaha, long overdue. Not much more to say on it other than unabashed in here, but go support it and go – say thanks to Frank, because I think as a Nebraska fan, the frustration and outrage you had at 7-7 and then 10-3 and then Kansas State stomping you in 0-3. It shifted to, okay, those weren't good times, but the overall painting was pretty nice. Got a lot worse after that. I think that's the lesson learned with this. If you think I'm wrong, give me a buzz, but I think you would have been happy with maybe going back in the old DeLorean and not getting rid of him, knowing what was to come following the struggles. And what they hear now is this: Nebraska is an underdog. Nebraska wasn't quite an underdog consistently like they are now when Frank Solich was coached. Now you have Nebraska an underdog. And listen, you're coming off four wins. You don't know who the quarterback's going to be. It's going to be a freshman or a redshirt freshman. You don't know who your center's going to be. You got a new defensive scheme and offensive scheme. You got a whole new coaching staff. Yeah, Nebraska picked at 5.5 wins is very, very safe by the powers that be. But when it comes to Danny's friends out in the desert in Las Vegas, having Wisconsin at minus 17 right now, you may not like it, but I don't think you're absolutely disrespected by it. Just based on what one program's supposed to do, win 13 games, compete and beat Ohio State for the conference championship, and Nebraska with all this newness. At Northwestern, minus 6. You know, I can see Northwestern being favored by 2 field goals, I think seems high. Iowa minus 8. I get it. It's been 4 years since you've beaten Iowa. End of the year. It's cold. They have out-muscled and out-manned Nebraska. I get it. But the thing is these numbers have grown a little bit, at least the Iowa and the Northwestern. It wasn't always the case where Northwestern would be favored. Nebraska would be favored, but it'd be a small number. Iowa, Nebraska would be favored, but it'd be a small number. So it's kind of, the script has flipped a bit, and Nebraska's just got to do some good old-fashioned sleeve rolling and hard work to get back. You can read more about these in Brandon Vogel's Hot Reads, HailVarsity.com, at Brandon L. Vogel. But yeah, the odds, the underdog mentality, I think it will serve it'll be some internal motivation, yes, and I think it can be tapped into when necessary. It's a little bit like Crown. A little's really good, too much, you don't want to go revisit Crown the next day because it can put a hurting on you. That's kind of how I see when you tap into the disrespect underdog angle. And I think Scott will use it. You use whatever you can, but you use it selectively. And I think he's going to be really smart about doing that. Another good point in this story is just where things have gone and where they've been at, where Ohio State was. Danny, chime in here, man. How much did you load up on Ohio State back in 16 when they were favored by 17.5, Nebraska coming off their overtime loss to Wisconsin, that heartbreak where they put every ounce and inch of emotion into that game to go play it and win it for Sam? Did you just load up on Ohio State?
I knew it was going to be a rough game.
Right?
And then that first possession when we're marching down the field a little bit, I was watching. I was like, okay.
You say maybe March. I say there was a pick on the third play of the game.
I was going to say. So, yeah, I'm not March, but you saw like they had some momentum.
They had good field position.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, they're kind of getting in a rhythm here. And then you see the pick six. And I'm like, yep, this is how the game is going to go.
Yeah. There are some games that are just telling, right?
Yeah.
They're just super telling. Things start off bad. Momentum's wearing a different color. The thing that I think you could see happen with this Nebraska team, like Bo's first team that had some talent on it, the talent needed to get coached up, I remember pretty vividly watching that Texas Tech-Nebraska game that went into overtime. And Joey Gans throwing that interception in overtime that still he's PO'd about, and I love Joe Gans, but they were right there against Leach's best team ever. I mean, they were ranked fifth in the country. The Crabtree game, you know, Crabtree season where they beat Texas on the last play of the game. It was 08. Nebraska went down there after a couple of embarrassing losses. Like Virginia Tech kind of spanked Nebraska. Then Missouri just dismantled them with the booger eater at quarterback. Missouri's best team, air quote, that ended up 10-4 and rocked by Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game yet again. Listen, I have a similar projection that it could be a little bit rough early, but I think you get better as the year goes on. So, bottom line here is jump in on Iowa, Nebraska, Northwestern Nebraska if you think they're going to be better by October, where they may not win. And there might be a lot of those games this first season where they don't win, but man, they fight and they were right there to win.
Yeah, what we were talking about yesterday, Brandon commented on it too. Obviously, those lines are going to change, and we think they'll probably be.
Can you lock in right now, though?
You probably could, yeah.
Can I lock in Nebraska and getting 17 points in Camp Randall?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think they cover all those games, honestly, because I think Wisconsin.
You heard it here first with Danny Cassino.
But what we've been talking about a lot is Nebraska might not win a lot of games, but they're going to stay in these games. Exactly. So that's why I picked them to at least cover against Wisconsin. I think Northwestern will be more of a field goal game, a 3-point, 4-point game, somewhere around there. Iowa, I think, is going to be up in the air. We'll see. It really just depends how we've been playing up to that point. I could see Nebraska winning that game.
Where are they at, too? By that point in the year, yeah. Because a lot of times Iowa's going at the end of the season for Iowa, they're going through Wisconsin, Minnesota, then Nebraska. That's how it's been stacked a lot of times, and Nebraska's faced that kind of triangle round robin action going on. Speaking of dogs and what's going on, let's spend a minute here on Golden State Houston. We'll get to recruiting here with Greg Smith in a minute, but how many of you were shocked last night that Houston won? I'm raising my hand. I was shocked that Houston won. I was kind of fascinated that Golden State looked like such a mess in the fourth quarter, and they were just so awful with the basketball, with the turnovers, and this isolation ball with Durant. And I've had my fair share of being beaten over the head with how awesome KD is. That was before he left for Golden State, but that's like the narrative in my household because my kid and my wife have loved KD forever, and now they're just kind of towards him now that he's at Golden State. But I am wowed that they look so lost when it comes to crunch time, and they are as ineffective as they have been in crunch time. With as many weapons and assets and choices as they have, they refuse to pass the ball. There's been a few glimmers of light last night with their possessions where they're moving the ball and they're getting a good shot. That's when their offense kind of got going. But for the most part, man, it is, let's catch it, let's chuck it up, let's try and make a Sports Center top 10. That's what's going through. That's what it looks like. That's what's going through the mind of Durant. And you've got this mesh point that I wonder if they can get back to where Steph's the guy that's been really good because of their motion. KD's the guy you go to because he's 18 feet taller than anybody, so you can ISO. And to have an A or a B is great. Well, they're living in the one-on-one. They're living like Houston, and Houston's living like Golden State, and Houston's won two really tough ball games where they were beaten within an inch of their life in a couple of instances in Game 5 and in Game 4. They were down. They were down, or they weren't supposed to come back. I think Golden State is a mess. I think they're really they're bamboozled a bit with Houston because they've supposedly killed Houston twice and already beat him by 41 once. What I mean by killed is like they've jumped out and there's been this wave, this moment in a game where it's all momentum and it's all Golden State, but Houston, they won't die and they won't go away. I think that's incredible for Houston, but I think Golden State's like, man, these guys are vampires or something. They're not going away.
It was a tough game to watch on both ends.
Oh, it's just let's blindfold each other and just shoot the ball.
Yeah, I mean, Harden only had, what, 18, 19 points? If Eric Gordon doesn't, you know, come off the bench and provide that spark,
Golden State shouldn't have even have been in it because Houston shot so bad early.
Yeah, and the thing with Golden State is they really just had no offensive or defensive structure, at least in the second half is what it looked like. So why is... why is Swaggy P shooting that three at the end of the game to try to take that lead? I get he's wide open, and why is Draymond getting that pass from Steph Curry? Why isn't Durant the one getting that pass, if anything? I'm not blaming Draymond for getting that
they were probably sick of throwing it into the black hole that is now Kevin Durant.
And speaking of throwing it in, what about their inbounds plays? You were talking about sloppy turnovers.
They stole it and went,
they did
like
that
with
a couple
3 minutes left.
Like,
yeah.
It just looks like they don't want to play out there.
Well, it's just stupid. It's just laziness. It's laziness and lackadaisical play. And we'll get into some overrated coaches. You sent me a text last night. I saw your tweet last night about Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
And the term overrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where I sit on that. I can hear your argument. I will. I can maybe counter that argument. Probably will. About who's overrated, who's underrated as a coach, and kind of put our heads together here for a list of some overrated, underrated coaches. And is Kerr overrated in your mind as a sports fan with what he's working with and what they're doing? It's everything's falling on top of the sky, that is, on Golden State. Great to be in on a Friday. We'll talk some Nebraska recruiting, the quarterbacks, Greg Smith on the way with Hail Varsity.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It's a double dip week for Greg Smith because there's always recruiting just around the corner. Friday Night Lights, some summer visits, and Greg Smith, your recruiting analyst for Hail Varsity, all over it at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Greg, what is up, man? How are you?
Hey, not a lot, man. I am very well, enjoying the sunshine, trying to not sweat through all of my clothes. It's warm.
Yeah, it's a little sticky. You're right on, but it's okay. There are cold drinks to hold on to and stay hydrated with this holiday weekend when you're firing the grill up. I'm going to try some brisket. I know you're going to do burgers and hot dogs, and we may need to... I might need to call and get your expertise because you're the pit master, man.
All right, I got you. I'm here for you if you need me. I am always just a shout away, and I'm a cake payment away from some actual help.
See, the old Easter Sunday cake I put
it'll
up there.
It'll never die.
No, it won't because it wasn't me. It just looked really cool, so let's throw it on Twitter. And it was Cousin Kelly who did the cake. Between you and Vogues, I will get steered right with barbecue. We'll see if I screw up the brisket this weekend. Or I make it the famous brisket versus the infamous brisket. Recruiting's been crazy. The staff's been on the road. Plenty of evaluations. And let's talk quarterbacks. And every Friday you do your recruiting recon column and can subscribe to read Greg's stuff or just check it out too. Some of it's free content as well. But a lot of the premium stuff, Greg puts together is incredible with HailVarsity.com. Well worth your time and your dollar. But I am so geeked about future years and not just future years, but this year, that showdown that seems familiar, right? Chip Kelly v. Scott Frost for quarterback prospects. How juicy is that, man?
Oh, it's big time. And one of the thing is that I think we all kind of assumed that was going to pick up with, you know, those two coaches being, or Chip Kelly coming back into the mix, going to Westwood and Scott Frost coming to Lincoln, is that now that they're both of those guys at the Power 5 level, Scott Frost learned a lot of principles under Chip with his offense, though I would be remiss if I didn't say that Scott Frost is quick to point out that he says that he's made some tweaks and updates to that system as well. I feel like he'll pop out and correct me if I don't say that. But because of that and the similarities in the offense, there will be similarities and crossover with the types of quarterbacks in particular that they're trying to recruit and go after. And there are a couple of big battles brewing in particular with four-star quarterback from California, Jaden Daniels, who looks like right now could be, you know, Nebraska and UCLA are probably his top two schools. I think UCLA has the edge right now, but Nebraska trying to get him badly to get on campus. Then Nebraska and UCLA UCLA will continue to battle for different quarterbacks.
You know, and there are some differences. And right now, I think what you have the newness of Frost. You have the momentum of Frost. Not that what Kelly in Oregon did is ever going to be forgotten, because Coach Frost is the first to really, you know, pay homage to that Oregon system. He's very, very upfront about how it's helped shape him. But you're right, there are going to be some differences between what Frost does, but they'll have plenty of Oregon influence. Right now, if you're Nebraska and you're Frost, you're it, you're hot, you're proven, you're recent, right? Because you just went 14-0. Chip Kelly's getting back in from being in the NFL. And from a perception standpoint, it's going to be big for Chip Kelly to have a decent first year, just like it's going to be big for Scott Frost to show what his system can do as the season goes forward next year. I think, you know, recency-wise, Frost is there, but Chip Kelly, I think Chip's got to win at a pretty high level early on, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that I would say that in the short term, I think that Chip Kelly's team will be better at UCLA than Nebraska. But I think long term, a lot of people believe that Nebraska and Scott Frost are set up for more long term success there. Just, you know, Scott's age, him being thought of that just as highly as Chip is. There's a lot of factors that go into that. But I do find that the Chip Kelly return to college experiment really fascinating, because, like you mentioned, a lot of recruits know him and they know that offense, but there's still a little bit of hesitation, I feel like, for people to go all in on Chip coming back to UCLA. But I think part of that is his personality, right? Is that he's always been a little bit prickly. Even if you think about his approach to recruiting versus, say, Scott Frost in Nebraska, I think UCLA has offered maybe four or five only quarterbacks for the 2019 class, and this was all very recently, whereas Nebraska is up in the double digits, close to 20. There's just a lot of differences in the way they go about running their programs, which makes it a little bit harder for people to wrap their arms around Chip Kelly.
Let's talk a little bit here about one of the other quarterbacks that Nebraska and UCLA are looking at, Shea Suaovia. He's out of Houston, Texas, and correct me if I butchered that, because I'm pretty sure I did. Wasn't intentional there, Shea. But where do things stand with Shea, Nebraska, UCLA, and some of the other offers for the talented dual threat out of Houston?
Yeah, I think it's Shea Suaanoa. I'm going with. We'll see. I need to get an actual pronunciation from him so I don't continue to butcher it myself. But he is down in Houston, Texas, like you said, playing 6A ball. And he's actually been the starting quarterback down at his high school since his sophomore year. He was thrown into the fire. He started over 20 games for his high school. Coach Verduzco went down here recently down to Texas to see him throw and kind of do some different drills, and came away blown away. Like, the offer came very quickly after that workout, being able to see that. And from talking to one of his high school coaches, they kind of had the feeling that that's where that was going, because Nebraska also has an offer out to one of their linebackers who has over 40 offers as well. But Nebraska really likes Shea. They are one of the few schools on his offer list that really wants him as a quarterback. We talked about that with a couple other guys, John Lace Plumlee down in Mississippi, a couple others. But once Verduzco and Frost lock in on you as a quarterback, they have no problems, you know, making you their guy, so long as they see the potential to play quarterback.
You know what? And does Nebraska have an advantage with Frost and Verduzco offering the air quote athletes the quarterback spot? Because not every place will do that. It gives Nebraska more quarterbacks to look at, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, because this happens every recruiting cycle where, and it used to not be in Nebraska's favor, where, you know, a kid, you know, maybe is really athletic and has played quarterback in high school, but most teams want him to play safety or wide receiver or corner at the next level. But Nebraska would lose them to a school that maybe said, hey, we'll let you play quarterback and run kind of our spread system. We see that all over the place. Now Nebraska on the other side of that, I do think that it opens up the number of available prospects to them, and you combine that with the staff's track record of being able to produce quarterbacks, and you've got some big names to throw out there. Hey, we were involved with Marcus Mariota. Everybody knows him. Hey, you saw what we did with McKenzie Milton. And like it or not, I think that McKenzie Milton's stature, the way that he looks out there being a smaller guy, I think that helps them on the trail because they can say, hey, listen, we think you've got just as many physical tools as he did. You see what we were able to do with him. He's a great quarterback, great prospect, but we can do that with you too. They definitely have a lot to sell when it comes to quarterback.
That's a fantastic example to point to. The world wanted Mariota because he's 6'2", 200, runs like a deer and can throw. Obvious, right? Yes, we all want him. But you look at Milton and look at what, with his hard work and the staff's hard work, what he developed into, that's two great examples. Couple more minutes here. Greg Smith, HailVarsity.com and magazine recruiting analyst at Greg Smith HV. Follow him on Twitter. Greg, total number of quarterback offers out there for Nebraska?
They're sitting around 18, 19 right now for the 2019 class. And it's funny because if you listen to what Scott Frost and Troy Walters have said throughout the spring about, you know, we don't have to have a quarterback that runs a 4-4, but he has to have it mentally. He has to be a quick decision maker. I think part of that is obviously true. I think they obviously value quick decision makers. And, yeah, not everybody has to run a 4-4, but if you go through and run through all of those close to 20 offers for the 2019 class, man, those guys can get after it athletically. Like, these are guys, you know, that are not statues back there. They can really run around and make plays with their legs and their arms. There's definitely a profile of a kid that they're going after.
No, it is. And you mentioned that Jaden Daniels. We mentioned Shea, Michael Johnson Jr. Is there a timeline for him decision-wise? And I want to go back to him because there's been more news on him, and you had a chance to speak with his high school coach.
Yeah, Johnson Jr., he has talked about making a decision going into his senior year, so sometime this summer, because he does kind of want to do some peer recruiting, as you typically get, you know, especially with quarterbacks in a recruiting class. They want to get in early and help build a class with them and bring other quality players in. But you got to look out to see if Nebraska gets him on campus. I think they will get him on campus sometime this summer, maybe even this month. And Nebraska is very, very high on him. Like, I have been told that he's near at the top of their board when it comes to the quarterback pecking order. And he's a super athlete. Obviously, a coach's son is his dad. Michael Johnson Sr. is a wide receivers coach out at Oregon. So that helps him with processing information and, you know, having a high football IQ. And his coach believes that the sky is the limit for him, that we really don't even know what his full potential is yet.
Greg, commit watch at all this weekend for anybody?
Yeah, I think the holiday weekend does have you on commit watch as Tony Fair, big defensive tackle, 6'3", 330-plus, out of Pima, Arizona Community College out in Tucson. I've been able to speak with him last week after he got his offer. He was very, very high on Coach Frost, I believe. Something to the effect of he's a younger Nick Saban, which always perks you up. His coach at JUCO is also very high on this staff and close with Coach Dawson. I think it's definitely heading in the direction of a Nebraska commitment probably tomorrow.
Okay, so there's a called shot for Mr. Greg Smith, possibly a commitment from Tony Fair tomorrow. It's kind of between Nebraska and Indiana for the defensive tackle, and that would work well for Nebraska. Greg, 60 seconds. What happens tonight? Cleveland, Boston, know you're big into the NBA.
I think Boston goes ahead and closes this thing out tonight, and we are one step closer to the king coming to his new kingdom of L.A.
Right. There's no hope or anything that this thing's done in six, so there can be golden purple mailed to LeBron in Akron. I get it.
It's not as if I've got a package put together already. I don't know what you mean.
Greg doesn't have jerseys already bought with names on the back. How about game six Monday? Does Houston close out?
Oh, man, that's going to be tough. No, I think Golden State wins that one, especially with the Chris Paul injury news. But I think Golden State would have won that anyway for game six. But no, I think Golden State's going to come back and take that one.
I think you could be set up for some incredible game sevens. Greg Smith, great recruiting info. HailVarsity.com and magazine. Follow him on Twitter at GregSmithHV. Greg, we'll get caught up again soon. Thanks for the time, bud.
Yeah, thanks as always, man.
Good to get caught up with Greg Smith, recruiting thoughts from Mr. Greg. We'll talk overrated coaches. Who are they on Hail Varsity next?
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, and you, Bill Dolman, 15 to 20 minutes away. Cedric Golden next hour. Friday forecast returns. A couple of game sixes in the NBA we will talk about. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Court, can tap house. Let's do that. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Let's talk overrated, underrated coaches. With the Warriors' last couple of performances, has Steve Kerr moved into the overrated category to you? And I've heard for years people get all over Phil Jackson. Well, he had Jordan, and he had Pippen, and he had Shaq, and he had Kobe. And my response is pretty easy. It's, well, what did those guys win before he got there? Nothing is the answer, and it's kind of my same response about Steve Kerr. What did they win before he got there? Mark Jackson did a great job of deciding to draft Klay Thompson and going and getting Steph Curry and finding Draymond, but you know they were at 53 wins and getting bounced in the second round. Steve Kerr put them over the top. How Steve handles a guy that is going to be the linchpin of the series, Kevin Durant, for game 6 and 7 is vital. He calmly and coolly last night said, you know, Phil told MJ to trust his teammates. He found John Paxson. Paxson hit the three. Yeah, you get your first three-peat and beat Phoenix. And again, against, they never played Houston, against the Jazz. One of the first time they took on the Jazz, it was a Kerr three on a kickout that got it done. So I don't think Kerr got stupid overnight. I think he is extremely frustrated. I think what makes him great is how he's going to get his point across to move the ball and win game six and have Durant just play like they did when they were winning it a year ago. They didn't get awful overnight. They've become selfish and they've pressed because they haven't really been challenged at this level by a team this good. This is the best team they've faced since I don't know when. I don't know what to tell you about some of the luck Golden State has experienced when it comes to teams they've beaten with injuries or who they haven't had to face. I got no answer for you on that other than yeah, they got lucky. Kawhi got hurt. Yeah, they got lucky that Boogie was out. Yeah, they got lucky that if they get Boston in the finals, they're going to get Boston without their two best players. They got lucky when Love and Kyrie were done. It is what it is. It's not their fault. They did what they could with it. They need to quit being soft. They need to man up and make some plays. And Draymond tried to will them back last night. The problem is he got too excited. I mean, that was awful, where he dropped the pass, went off his knee, turnover. One of 1,000, it seemed like, last night. Pass the ball, quit turning it over, be confident, don't be selfish. I mean, KD went full hero ball mode, and Kerr needs to have enough. Okay, I've had the polite conversation with you about trusting your teammates. Now you will listen or you will watch. Iggy getting back too is going to be big. So, Kerr's not overrated to me.
Okay, and I just want to reiterate, do I think he's overrated? I guess that really depends how many people think he's a very good coach. I just think anyone can...
He's getting killed now being overrated.
Maybe he's not so much more overrated. I want to say he's just not a great coach. I don't think he's a good coach. I'll still stand by that he's overrated. If people are going to come up to me and tell me that he's a great coach, then I'll say no, he's overrated. And I say this because of this. You said Steve Kerr was the one to put them over the top. Granted, I'll give you that in the beginning years before KD came. Okay, but what about when Steve Kerr was out? Luke Walton took over. They didn't even miss a step. Anybody can coach this Warriors team, but apparently not Steve Kerr right now. If you have four All-Stars and you're relying on Iggy to come back in to win, that's ridiculous. How can you have no scheme offensively and defensively?
They have a scheme offensively.
It's chuck-up shots. Steph Curry grabs a rebound, pulls it up behind the arc, chucks it up. You got to be able to
ball,
can your players.
It's ball movement, all right? And you need Draymond facilitating. Defensively, you need Iggy, okay? And when it comes to Luke Walton going autopilot, okay.
And also, how about Steve Kerr just letting his players coach? Anybody can coach a team. He's letting the players do it. Steve Kerr's showing that he can't do it right now.
It's a different dynamic in the NBA. Will you grant me that?
Yeah, for sure.
Where it's not college, it's not high school. Mm-hmm. It's dudes that make 17 times as much as you, and they will get you fired before they'll listen to you. Is Steve Kerr great? I think getting them to play at the level they were at, perfect the three-point shot, not that it's really revolutionized the game because they want the trailer in transition for three. They just need to know when they're being too greedy with that shot. And instead of getting to the rim. Listen, is he a great coach? I don't know if he's great, but he did put them over the top. They made three straight finals. They pissed away a 3-1 lead. They've also came back from a 3-1 deficit to a pretty good Thunder team, right? He needs to get his guys to play better, play tougher, and play smarter. If he doesn't do that, this will be a monster stain because you will have lost to a team that's got Chris Paul. They didn't shoot him great. He is leading. He was coaching his guys last night, by the way, too, pre-hamstring. He was the one in the... There's four dudes sitting on the bench, and it was Paul. He was the one giving Harden crap about how much dribbling he's doing. You saw that highlight. It was hilarious. You have James Harden, who he's missed 20 consecutive threes.
0 for 20.
He is... That's brutal. An MVP's never done that. Ever. Okay? As far as I can remember. So they will have been beaten by a team that out-toughed them and out 50-50 balled them and got some really good role player contributions. But they should not lose. They should not lose to the Rockets.
Tell me how Steve Kerr does if you put him on an Orlando Magic team, a Brooklyn Nets team, any team that is below 500. I don't think he gets a job done. I think he gets 3 years,
and
gets canned. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Kind of like D'Antoni when he was with Phoenix and then he went to New York.
Yeah,
eventually it wore out. Mm-hmm, you get better. You keep learning as you go. I think the thing you need to look at with Kerr, kind of like Phil Jackson, is... Yeah, you better make the filet mignon or the steak taste awesome because it's steak and it's filet mignon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he has that. What do you do with it? Do you burn it or do you put it perfectly to that medium rare juiciness that we all love, mm-hmm, or we should all love?
And as of this moment...
That's my thing. It's okay, should he do well? Yes, he has great players, but you still got to get them to perform, and he has done that.
I mean, not when their back's against the wall. Where is their offensive scheme in the fourth quarter? Why is Klay Thompson chucking up a shot in the corner in two games ago or whatever? Why is Draymond turning the ball over? Why is Swaggy P having that last open shot? There's no offensive scheme. Why is JaVale and McGee not playing? They need help on defense.
Because they're getting switched all the time by Houston. And
you have four All-Stars. You can make so many adjustments, and they're just
and these four All-Stars together have not had to respond to this type of event. They blew everyone out last year.
And
we'll see if they do it again.
To fix that.
It is, and he'll win in seven.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Bill Dolman's 10 minutes away. Get his take on the NBA, some Nebraska football topics. Cedric Golden on Kevin Durant's struggles. Derek Peterson has a good write-up and a podcast. You can check out hailvarsity.com and log on for that. Of course, Colton and Danny did the show yesterday. If you missed that or you want to get caught up with their thoughts, find the podcast, hailvarsity.com, or go to iTunes for that. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke back with you. The forecast is coming up, too. When we're talking overrated, underrated, it's easy to look at guys who took programs – that were nothing and made them something. I think that's universally accepted, and I applaud that. Where, all right, this coach pretty good. Bill Snyder, Gary Barnett, specifically Bob Devaney. Right now, can you maintain? And you had Golden State at a certain level. They went up to a higher level, and they've maintained championship ability. They're working on another title. Does the dynasty end? I don't know, but that's what we're in the middle of. That's why we like Popovich, right? He's had some studs, but you got to get him to perform. And your point about Luke Walton taking over, going autopilot, that's a good point, but things were set up in place so well by Kerr that it could go cruise control, and Luke got hired away to at least get a crack because of the mentoring. Any other coaches that you think are overrated? I don't know if this is jealousy. I'll never say Nick Saban's overrated because of the pressure of winning and being successful at a blue blood and resurrecting a blue blood and then getting that recruiting machine where he doesn't care if you're a five-star or not. He's going to get you either play like a five-star or you're gone. Some coaches don't really care for Urban Meyer because of the situations he's always gone into.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Urban Meyer should have more than one title?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's fair with the talent they've had.
Right, definitely.
I'll say this, though. They're not afraid of the non-con scheduling. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a lot of turnover because people come and get his coaches. They'll get head jobs. I was kind of on the fence about James Franklin.
Yeah.
Because he won at Vanderbilt again. Impressive. Wow.
Yeah, you were talking about that the other day with Shuey.
Yeah.
Because he was saying that about the top 25 coaches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And listen, I think Franklin's kind of turned the corner for me. I think there's a hell of a lot of good players that Bill O'Brien brought him.
Right.
What's this next phase look like?
Exactly.
And knowing how good Scott Frost has been, how quickly he's done it, that's super impressive. I don't have like a long list of like overrated coaches.
I have one that's been irking me a lot.
Too.
And I know I'll be getting shot down for it. Joe Maddon, manager of the Cubs. I think he is overrated.
Aren't you like a diehard?
I am a diehard Cubs fan.
Pass me an old style.
Back home, my childhood room is literally painted Wrigley Field.
Sure. I went as a kid. Mm-hmm. That's what was our family vacation. We go to Wrigley every year or every couple of years. I mean, I've been to Wrigley about 10, 15 times in my life, and it's awesome. I loved it. I'm Mark Grace era, Luis Salazar era for me.
No, see, I do
Hector
love
Villanueva.
Joe Maddon, and I love what he does off the field to get his players loose. He just does the biggest bonehead plays in the game in crucial situations. Just the other day with Javier Baez
actual
in
managing.
The World Series. Yes, he does he'll just randomly do the stupidest things where it's like, does this guy know anything
about
football?
So he'll overthink and underdeliver?
He'll try to just do weird, funky things and try to outsmart people. And
I'm the smartest man in America.
Yeah.
One of those guys.
I love him. But he just
he's packing you off.
Yeah.
Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury, great hot dogs. NBC Sports on the way.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back into an hour two of Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery, the pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, and the voice of Big 12 Baseball, Bill Dolman, at Bill Dolman on Twitter. Billy D., how are you, sir?
Well, I'm in Oklahoma, and we haven't had a tornado yet, so I think that's a positive. And the baseball tournament down here in Oklahoma City has gone on really unimpeded by the weather, although for a guy who lives in Denver to walk into the wall of water that is the humidity down south, it has been quite the adjustment.
It's a bit sticky out, and, you know, it's just this time of year. Yeah, there's always potential for severe weather down in Oklahoma. I want to talk a few things Nebraska with you. We'll get into some NBA. But first and foremost here, you've had a chance to look this week, and some of the odds are out for Nebraska. The win projection we've hit on Nebraska at 5.5. But there's a number of games this year where Nebraska and in year one, Coach Frost will be underdogged. How do you think that will be broached, or will it, by Frost this first year with the team?
Well, I don't know if it'll be a huge topic. I think it's one of those things that you know is out there, and you're not going to be able to hide it from anybody. I'm sure that it's going to be motivating. It ought to be motivating for anybody who's a part of the program. And this is a program that right now is on a high. There really shouldn't be a lot of uncertainty when it comes to you know, having a new coach in the program. You're trying to figure out who this guy is. I mean, just like when go back to the dark chapters we've gone through. Mm-hmm. When Bill Callahan came in, it was an awful time for Nebraska football. I mean, sure, the guy had a resume that included the Super Bowl, but he still didn't have any idea what the program's identity was going to be like. And then he goes, and, you know, everybody, I think, had an idea of what they were going to get with Bo. And for the most part, you got success with Bo. Mm-hmm. But, and then Mike Riley comes in, and again, it's, what do we have here? What's it going to be like? Who is this guy? Does he know us? Not since really, you know, Frank Solich took over for Tom, do you have somebody that you know, somebody who knows the program, somebody knows who, you know, knows what everything is about with Nebraska football. So I don't think that there is that uncertainty of a new coach taking over the program. Now, granted, Scott's been gone for, 20 years? Mm-hmm. But he's done everything right in the offseason. The players certainly, you know, were able to figure out who he was, you know, for, you know, all of last season when they watched Central Florida, especially in the intensity of the spotlight that they were under the last, 6 weeks of the season or 4 weeks of the season. And then we've had a spring with them. So the uncertainties that go with the new coaching staff, I don't think are necessarily there or heightened going into this season. So when you take a look at all these odds makers and what people are saying, Nebraska's going to win 5 games and then they're going to win 6. And I mean, I don't think I've seen anybody say 7. I think they're underestimating the power of having somebody who gets what the program is all about. And so for that reason, I think Nebraska is going into the season with a lot of momentum. I think there may be more uncertainty, you know, from the opponents. You know, what's Nebraska going to look like? You know, how was the last regime underutilizing the talent that's already in the program? You know, I don't think that everybody that they're going to be playing, you know, has a pretty good handle on what Scott and company plans on doing this year. And the fact that Nebraska's got, you know, some freshness, is motivated, everybody's excited, I think that could go a long way, especially early. And if Nebraska beats, you know, Colorado, I think that will go a long way in determining, you know, how the season is going to go. And if Nebraska finishes, if it's 5-7 with a win over Colorado, not that it's a rival, but it's, you know, it's a name team, you know, it's a name team in the non-conference part of the season. I think that'll go a long way to, you know, setting a tone for the rest of the year. And I couldn't tell you a lot about Colorado because nobody in Denver or anywhere in the state of Colorado, even Boulder, talks about the Buffs.
They don't talk about the Buffs till they're winning, you know? I mean,
it takes a while. 2 years ago, when that program was like 7-0 in October, it was all of a sudden like, hey, did anybody notice this?
Right. You know? Because they'd been cranking out 3-4 wins prior to.
Right, right. But I'm telling you, nobody pays attention to what Colorado, or nobody paid attention to what Colorado was doing last year or 2 years ago until they were like 7 or 8-0 and having a great season. And then the bandwagon got fairly big, but they're excited. But for the most part, then they just faded back into the woodwork. You know, that's just the way it is. So, but I think that's a tell game for Nebraska, that if they come out, play well, win that game, and I think it'll be very, you know, successful the rest of the way. But again, what do the other teams know about Nebraska? I don't think there's very much.
The talent utilization point you made is very intriguing because you look at the talent on the roster, and the talent's got to be honed, coached up, developed further, right? But on its face, you are getting some pretty high-level recruits if you just mesh in the hype by Riley and then some of the kids that Bo got, and you kind of put those together. There's still some of those kids in the program. Maybe not as many Bo guys, but you've got like the speed and athleticism of a Tyjon Lindsey that it's the same kid Oregon was going after, right? So there's some matching parts to use in this system. Bill, I want to ask you about expectations and dealing with, you know, a super high bar, a successful standard. And you saw Coach Frost do that as a player. You lived it with Coach Osborne hosting the Tom Osborne Show and just being around the program for as long as you have been. How did Tom deal with those expectations on a day-to-day and on a grander scale? And you had a bit of a shift from really good teams in the 80s, a team that probably didn't live up to the hype in 90, and then you had a whole different approach in 91 beyond. Frazier helped, obviously. 4-3 helped, obviously. But you saw a whole new Nebraska, like the last chapter. How did Coach Osborne just live and deal with what the fan base wanted?
You know, I think it would be one way to say it would be that I don't think he really cared about the expectations, but I know that he did. But it's all about the consistency of character. And if the guy at the top is consistent, never too high, never too low, and, you know, players begin to understand that day in and day out, year in and year out, then it becomes the consistent theme that it really doesn't matter who you're playing against, it's how well you're preparing and playing yourself. So you met expectations by preparation. And if you didn't win, then you came back on, you know, Sunday and Monday and just started over again and you put that last game behind you. Now, we were fortunate that there weren't many of those losses. But I think that the consistency and the way you prepared was the way that they met expectations. And if everybody was prepared to play on Saturday, usually those expectations were met. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to run into a great Oklahoma team or every now and then a really good Missouri team or a team that might get lucky once every decade in Colorado. For the most part, you know, Nebraska met expectations because that's what the standard was set every day, not just on Saturday. You know, I still am amazed, and I've never forgotten the scene of being, you know, at a practice and working the crowd noise, which was funny. But in watching Nebraska at Memorial Stadium practice with four full stations of players. And so everybody was getting 70, you know, to 100 reps a day. And, you know, Craig Bohl has adopted that at Wyoming. And I would imagine that Scott will have that going on at Nebraska. There was no standing around. The only time you stood around was if somebody subbed you in for a rep or two, and then you got back in and, you know, they'd have somebody in the north end zone. They'd have somebody along you know, two units of players along one sideline and then another along the south sideline and then another in the south end zone. And everybody was practicing and repping and prepping for the weekend's game. So if everybody is, you know, doing their job during the course of the week, you know, eight times or 85% of the time, you're going to meet expectations, which Tom did. And if guys are prepared, they'll play well. That to me is how they did it.
NBC Sports is Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury, Hale Varsity Radio. A few more minutes. Bill, I want to shift to the NBA. We were having this discussion a bit earlier about overrated coaches, and I'm not ready to say Steve Kerr is overrated. I'm shocked at how Golden State has been unable to finish. Part of that credit goes to Houston, obviously. But it's something Golden State's not had to deal with this group. The response has been by Houston and not Golden State. What's your take on Steve Kerr? What do you think of him? And do you think he's getting out of his guys what needs to be happening? Or do you think this is more about Houston? How do you read this 3-2 deficit?
Well, I think Mike D'Antoni has done a terrific job in you know, the face of losing game one and having a 41-point loss for them to come back. Had they lost game, what would that have been, four? If they lose game four, this series is over. And there's just no shot of Houston winning. I think this is really, it really is more about Mike D'Antoni than what Steve Kerr is or isn't doing. I mean, you know, all the cards are on the table when it comes to Golden State. You know, Thompson's going to get shots. Curry's going to get shots. Durant's going to do his thing. But I think Houston has been put together in a way around James Harden with Mike D'Antoni that, you know, they just didn't have the right pieces in place. And having watched them the last couple of games, Chris Paul, as much as, you know, they said James Harden is our leader, Chris Paul is the leader of that team. And now he's not going to play on Saturday, which is going to be very detrimental to the Rockets. But they also have guys that bring an attitude that they haven't had before. And Eric Gordon has been fantastic, not just in his offensive production, but he's got an edge to him that, you know, Pat Beverly had. But I don't think Pat Beverly had necessarily the maturity to go along with that just pain-in-the-ass attitude that he was on the court. And I like Pat Beverly when I was down in Houston. But Gordon brings a maturity in with that edge. I think P.J. Tucker, you know, I don't think he scored, but he had like 15 rebounds or something. There's an edge there. You know, guys that don't back down to Draymond Green, and certainly Iguodala being out hurts Golden State. But, you know, a couple years ago when the Rockets lost, I think it was to Portland in the playoffs, and Harden might have been my last year in Houston, mm-hmm. You know, Harden was just all over the place and actually played a lot like he did last night. I mean, he's missed like 23-point shots in a row. And Houston just didn't have the people that had the edge, you know, to carry them when, you know, he's flailing around like that. So is this about Steve Kerr? I don't know. I think it's more in the way the Rockets have been put together around James Harden. So then when he goes into these flailing funks in the playoffs, there are other guys that can carry the load and lead. And I think Eric Gordon has really been a star for them and won the game for them last night. I would anticipate that Golden State will win in San Francisco or Oakland or wherever they're playing their next game, and I think Houston probably wins it in seven. Because James Harden can't continue to shoot as awfully as he has. At least I don't think that's possible. But this time around, the Rockets have people that can pick him up and play with the edge that they haven't had.
Last thought here, Bill Dolman, NBC Sports, Hail Varsity Radio. Can Golden State kind of get their mojo back if it's a tight game and there's 3 minutes left and it's a one-point game? I never thought I'd see them look unable to finish like they did.
I think they can, but I think the Rockets just have a lot more confidence than they've had in the past to get the job done and shut them down. And maybe that's in the heads of Golden State more so than it has been since, what was it, the 2016 final when they lost to Cleveland. They finally have, you know, found somebody that's may not be afraid of them. Now, James Harden might be, but again, Tucker's not, Gordon's not, Chris Paul is not, and I think Clint Capella is playing, you know, with almost a naivete that he doesn't know any better. So I don't think you're seeing Houston shrink in the moments, and even in those big moments that in the past have been tailor-made for Curry, Thompson, and, you know, in the last couple of years, Kevin Durant. So if the Rockets keep it close in San Francisco, and even if they lose, I think that's, you know, that bodes well for them going into Houston for Game 7. But you know what? I think losing Chris Paul is significant. It would not surprise me if James Harden went off for 47 points and they actually steal Game 6. Maybe there's enough doubt going on with Golden State that somebody's actually standing up to them. I think that got to Draymond Green last night when he fumbled the ball in the last, 8 seconds of the game and basically turned it over, and the Rockets won it.
I think you're right on. I mean, uncharacteristic non-playmaking moves by some of the guys that have been there and won it before by Golden State. Bill Dolman, Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, and voice of Big 12 Baseball. Billy D., enjoy the rest of your time in Oklahoma. We'll get caught up again next week. Thanks for your insight and input as always, bud.
All right, brother. Talk to you later.
Bill Dolman, Pride of Fairbury, at Bill Dolman on Twitter. We'll spend a few more minutes on some NBA. Cedric Golden, Boston American Statesman's covered Kevin Durant for a long time. What's going on with KD? Friday forecast, Danny Burke, Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago. I'll have his thoughts on the weekend NBA action. Cedric Golden on the way.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back in, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. He is tremendous with the Austin American Statesman, host of On Second Thought podcast. Love to talk some NBA and some college football. Again, with Cedric Golden, at Ced Golden on Twitter. Cedric, what's good, man? How are you?
Man, not bad at all. Things are great. I'm in my hometown of Tyler. The weather's great because I'm indoors. That's the only time it can be great in East Texas.
I have never been to Tyler. Correct me if I'm wrong. That where Earl Campbell from?
Yes, sir. Yeah, he put the city on the map, and he's an icon, a Pro Football Hall of Famer, and along with an actress by the name of Sandy Duncan, those are the two most famous people to ever come out of Tyler.
I got to sit down and have a refreshment with Earl at his restaurant on 6th Street the Friday night before Nebraska got beat by Texas in 1999. What a good dude.
He's a walking history book. He's a cool, laid-back dude who will tell you, he doesn't get around very good these days, and when you carry the ball 30 times a game for 10 years, that's going to happen, but he doesn't regret any of that. Just one of those guys who's a living testament to toughness and how the game used to be played when all we talked about going into Sunday were the games and not what was going on during the national anthem. So those were simpler times for sure.
Well, you mentioned toughness. Cedric Golden with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You've covered and seen and spent a lot of time around KD. Golden State has lost consecutive games. They are on the verge of elimination. We'll get into game six here in a little bit. But what's your reaction from last night? What were you expecting and what did you see?
I don't know if you saw it, but at midway, like in the early and late in the third quarter, early in the fourth, they had some audio of Steve Kerr talking to KD.
Saw it.
And he was telling them about when Phil Jackson asked Michael Jordan, famously against the Phoenix Suns, who's open, and Jordan said John Paxson. He goes, get him the ball, trust your teammate. He was trying to tell KD that it's okay to trust your teammates. They averaged 334 passes a game during the regular season, which is by far and away the most in the league. But they're down to 276 a game in this series because they're playing too much isolation ball, just throwing it to KD and letting him try to back people down, and it's not working. They're a free-flowing offense. When you have four All-Stars on the court at the same time, I think it's almost criminal to try and depend on one, even though that one is easily one of the most difficult matchups in NBA history. Kevin Durant is 7 foot tall and can get his shot against anybody. But here's the thing, Chris, he hasn't shown up in the fourth quarter. He's 1 out of 9 in the last two fourth quarters. And after they've scored over 120 points in back-to-back games, including a 41-point blowout in game three, they're on the verge of elimination because they've fallen into the KD trap and they've forgotten what made them great to begin with. And that's moving the ball, getting it to Klay Thompson, getting it to Steph Curry, and letting Draymond Green be the facilitator.
Did you ever worry about KD showing up in a fourth quarter?
No. He always showed up. And I'm going to tell you, one thing that did pop into my mind, game six, I think, against Golden State, his last year with the Oklahoma City Thunder, they had a closeout game at home, and he didn't show up. He went 10 out of 31. And he was jacking up these hero shots, and he was missing. And they ended up losing that game, and then they lost in Game 7. And then he ultimately went and joined the Golden State Warriors, and people came after him because he had that series on his fingertips and didn't close, only to go and join the team that beat him. So I think it's happened before. I think Kevin Durant is going to have to remember where he plays. You don't have to be the alpha dog on that team. Steph Curry had it going for a while. Klay Thompson had it going for a while. He has the luxury of not playing great night in and night out and still having a chance to win. But I think he pressed a little bit too much. There was that one where they had a mismatch on Chris Paul, and he ends up getting his shot blocked from the side because he didn't go strong. He was fading away. So he's taking a beating in the Bay Area today. But I think the series is still there for them, especially with the news that Chris Paul won't be playing in Game 6 with that hammy.
There's some some points here I want to get into with KD and Curry, that dynamic. They shared the ball so well last year, right? They had the gentleman's sweep. It's been a long time since this team's had to respond to pressure as a group, as a unit. They've either blown out people or they've been blown out due to the injury situation. Their inability to respond the final 3 minutes, the shot selection, the turnovers, they just look like a mess. And I didn't think I'd see that because they've won before, but the closer I look, Cedric, what's your take on this? They've not been in this position before together, facing a team as good as Houston, and they're cracking a bit.
Houston is Golden State.
Yes.
They're beating them by sharing the ball. James Harden was 0 of 11 from three-point range, and Houston still managed to win the game because they had other guys like Eric Gordon stepping up and Clint Capela and P.J. Tucker. The Rockets are the epitome of team right now, and I really don't think that they would be in this position if not for Chris Paul's leadership in the locker room. He's the one guy on that roster who will get in James Harden's face and tell him what needs to be done. James might not like it, but the thing about it is James Harden respects Chris Paul, who's one of the top five or six point guards to ever play the game. So I think that toughness and that leadership has kind of trickled down to James Harden, who is still going to win the MVP, and it's kind of spread over that roster. And they're playing with a lot of confidence. Do they have enough to beat the Golden State Warriors in Game 6 without Chris Paul? Well, if James Harden goes 0 for 11 from 3 this time, they're going to get blown out. You don't want to really wake a sleeping giant. If Golden State wins this series, I still won't be surprised, Chris.
No, I think they should. I mean, they're the better team. They have more talent. They are supposed to, right? I mean, they just with all those pieces.
They are, but they're missing Iguodala.
No,
Iggy's
big. Yeah,
off the bench, and he's one of those guys, and you don't even notice it during a game, but then you look up at the end of the game, and he's got 12 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. And that second unit that comes off the bench, the start second quarters, Steve Kerr usually keeps Durant in there with that group, but you're talking about a Durant, Iguodala, Sean Livingston, the Bell kid's been playing lately, and either Draymond or one of those bigs off the bench, Looney. So those that unit has given Houston fits, but now without Iguodala, you lose a very valuable perimeter defender, someone that could guard James Harden and Chris Paul. And they don't, besides Draymond Green, they don't really have a guy that can guard multiple positions. Klay Thompson's a good perimeter defender, but he's not going to guard a guy that's like a forward type, a big guy like that. So they missed that with Iguodala. And I think Iguodala, being a former Finals MVP, not going to shy away from any kind of challenge. He'll probably play in Game 6 because it's basically all hands on deck. It's an elimination game, but after that, who knows?
Do you think there's some infighting at all with Golden State? I mean, there was this message of positivity. We're okay. We know what we can do. I'm paraphrasing Kerr in the post game last night. But do you think there is a wrong rub between Curry's style, where he's the reason for a lot of these passes, the 336 passes they averaged, his motion versus the ISO with the matchup advantage of KD? Do you think those two are going to be able to coexist to move forward and mesh their offensive styles?
Oh, of course, because they won a championship. They've already won a championship together. So, yeah, I do believe that they are going to figure it out. I think that Steve Kerr knows that the offense has gotten too bogged down, and then they're standing around and watching KD, which is an easy trap to fall into because he's a scoring machine. But as far as the team is concerned, it doesn't always work out for them. So I think what's going to happen is when Game 6 rolls around, you're going to see a lot more motion. You're going to see a lot more Draymond Green at point forward, and you're going to see a lot more Steph Curry and Klay Thompson getting more involved. And KD's still going to get his, but they're going to be a little bit more disseminating when it comes to that. They're going to be a little bit more free flowing, and that's going to be mean more passes, and the wealth is going to be spread a lot more because them being a one man team that didn't win them championships. They won championships because they had Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green sharing the wealth. You bring in KD, and the league's not ready for that. They've kind of adjusted to it. But what they also have to remember especially particularly KD, is you've got all-star teammates. Use them.
Senator, we'll get you out of here on this. Senator Golden, Austin American Statesman, Hail Varsity Radio on Second Thought Podcast. Please listen to that. Great work by Cedric. Texas has been extremely aggressive in the past with some of their non-conference, and I think of the Notre Dames on the docket, USC, Texas, and future scheduling with you have Bama on the horizon, you had LSU coming up. Oh, why do you think Texas is being so aggressive? It's awesome for college football, and you've covered college football for a long time, but Texas doesn't necessarily have to go schedule big boys. Why do you think they're doing it?
I think Chris Del Conte, the AD, the athletic director, is obsessed with getting the Longhorns back into that national relevance conversation. Texas is number one in merchandising, but on a football field, they're an average program at best, and haven't been really relevant since 2009 when they played for a national championship against Alabama. Del Conte and then Alabama AD Greg Byrne are big buddies, and they got on the phone and they ironed some things out, and they're going to play Alabama in 2022 and 2023, and that's going to be a great home and home. The question is, will Nick Saban still be the coach at Alabama? He's not going to coach forever, you know. I don't know if he's going to be Joe Pa, and will Tom Herman still be at Texas? A lot can happen in 6 years, bro. So I wonder what the dynamic is going to be. But I can tell you from the Texas angle is that he wants to be in these kind of conversations. He knows that if they can spring a few upsets, beat a couple of those big dogs, it's going to help merchandising. It's going to help recruiting. And you got Ohio State. They're going to play Ohio State in 2025 and 2026. They got LSU coming in. And so I think it's a great idea as long as they don't just get rolled by these great programs who haven't fallen off in a while. Texas has fallen off. So what I think Del Conte is wagering is that by the time you get to Alabama and Ohio State, the ship will have been righted, and the Longhorns are going to be back in the top 10 conversation. So once you're in the top 10 and recruiting classes are flowing, you can play those big dogs. And it's kind of risky if you're talking about, trying to make it to the college football playoff and getting in that committee with a big loss on your ledger. But you know what? My dad always said this, and God rest his soul, and I'm going to clean this up for you, Chris. You got to bring tail to get tail. So I think that's what Texas is thinking there.
That is accurate from Papa Bear there. I like that. And, yeah, get that stage and give yourself an opportunity. You have the name to get in the door, so to speak, and schedule these games. You might as well try and build up to win them. I like it. Cedric Golden with us, Austin American Statesman. Cedric, have a great holiday weekend, man. Thanks for a few minutes today.
You too, brother. Good to hear from you, man.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Hope you're doing all right. Hope you have a great holiday weekend planned with family and friends. And we remember those who have served. For sure, for sure. Chris Schmidt and Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago. We'll get to the Friday forecast here in one moment. We will let you know that your Friday forecast presented to you by the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling and Choices Treatment Center. If you or someone you love has a problem with gambling, call the statewide helpline 1-800-522-4700. And keep that in mind as things get legalized everywhere. Daddy, a big game six tonight. Cleveland, Boston, back in C-Town. And Boston's just always had an answer, except on the road. Was there a lone road win in Philly? Is that right? Because they're like 1-6.
Yeah, I want to say, yeah, there was. I think so.
But other than that, they're a nightmare.
Yeah, no. This series has just been going back and forth. Home wins for both teams. LeBron, in one of the breaks, ESPN, they were just saying LeBron facing elimination averages 33 points, I think it was. I was looking at his over-under totals. I think they had him at 36. So, I don't know. I stayed away from that, but I think he's definitely going to be right around in that mid-30s range. I'm all in on the Cavs tonight.
I think so, too. And we were both in on Boston.
No, I actually had the Cavs. Okay. You had Boston,
okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to give credit where credit wasn't due. Fine. Good for you being honest. Look at you. I'm proud of you.
Got to be honest. I got to take it.
So I thought that one, because wasn't it Boston laying one?
Yeah, I think that's what
I think
it was.
You're going to take them at home and give the point.
Mm-hmm. Are you sticking with them?
I think they force a game seven, yes. What's the number, eight?
Seven.
Okay.
Cleveland minus seven.
I think that number's too high. I think Cleveland wins, but Boston covers. And I'm going to fall into the trap of lower scoring postseason games because you've seen it from Cleveland and Boston. Then you've seen it, as we say, low scoring 95, 92, 98, 94 okay. type games.
They have the over-under at 201, so.
So it'll be 101, 100. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go under.
Okay.
Watch me just get slapped for it, but I'm going to go under and say that it's going to be right or right. You'll be sweating it out. So stay away from the over-unders. But I think they hit under if you want a little gravy.
I think the NBA playoffs are the hardest to decide over-unders for sure because it just fluctuates so much. And when the Cavs blew out the Celtics, I mean, you're not hitting the over when that happens. But if you're thinking it's going to be a close game, which I think it will be closer for sure, I can see it hitting the over. I don't know if the Cavs are going to cover that, but at home they've just been smacking on the Celtics. Like I've said previously, I think the Celtics are very inexperienced, so they don't produce well on the road, especially in the playoffs going against LeBron. So just for the sake of it, I'm going to take the Cavs covering that 7-point spread. So it is high, though. I hate it. I'm not like all in on it, but I'm going to go with it. So give me the Cavs 110 to 101.
So they'll kind of barely cover it.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up covering and hitting the over.
Yeah.
And they hit the over by a few.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk Monday night. We'll be back Tuesday mm-hmm. for the show. And it'll be a game six, Golden State, Houston. I can't see. You want to talk about like the ultimate against the grain bet right now? Is to take Houston in the points
mm-hmm.
without CP3, with a desperate Golden State. They haven't felt this type of desperation since Game 7 of the NBA Finals, where it got real. They haven't dropped consecutive games either mm-hmm. since the Finals right. of 2 years ago.
That's right.
So, They win. I think they win. I think you're going to have Clay and Steph do their thing. I think you'll have a much more somber, reserved KD where he'll be efficient. He'll get his 20. What I don't know is if him going hero ball is all ego or if he feels, if it's not as much ego as it is. But guys are struggling, guys are dinged.
Yeah, I think
I'm the
that.
Last man standing.
Right. I think he's has the mentality like, you know, someone's got to do something. We're just shy with the ball here. We don't want to take this last shot. Somebody's got to step up. He's like, all right, I got to do it. If I got to force it up, at least it's up there. We're not getting shot clock violations.
And you'll want to do that up until it turns into crunch time.
Yep,
where
exactly.
it is, well, the guy doesn't hit any game-winning shots.
Then he's nowhere to be found.
Then he hides.
Yeah.
So he's your classic case of a follower. He's great,
mm-hmm.
but he wants the reward without the risk.
That's actually a very good point. I agree with that 100%. And, yeah, so the spread for this game is 11.5 in favor
wow.
of Golden State. I think Golden State
wins, but Houston might cover that.
I don't know. Without CP, I just don't think there's a chance it's going to be a close game.
Let's see over-under.
Over-under 212. I think it might be.
I think it hits overs.
I think it might be like game three where the Warriors just smack them and they didn't hit the over. Granted, I think the over under was like 220 or 230 something.
So when they won by 41, they didn't hit the over?
No, just because the Rockets were that bad. And it was like 230 was the over under, I think. It was
my
insanely
Lord.
High.
Well, I think we're going to see a game seven
mm-hmm.
in both instances.
Yep.
Give me Golden State. You've talked me into it. Give me Golden State like 112, 100.
Okay. Just covering.
Just covering.
All right. I am all in on Golden State. They were going to win regardless if CP3 was in or not, but it wouldn't have been by a landslide.
Do you think Harden goes off like Dolman was talking about?
Yeah, he has to. Especially if you're going to be the MVP, you have to do that, and you can't do much worse than he did in this previous game, and they still won. That's amazing. So I do,
the last two games.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, Eric Gordon, he's carrying you.
He's your MVP.
Yeah, seriously. So I think Golden State will for sure cover it. Over under, I think it'll hit 212. Is very like, some, I want to like just curious when the last time it was that low between these two teams playing. I'm sure it's the lowest it's been.
It's gradually dropped.
Yeah.
You know what's nuts is Cedric's statistics. The Golden State averaged 336 passes a game.
Right. Yeah. That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now they're down to 275.
Mm-hmm. Something's fishy there.
Well, it's just reluctance.
Yeah.
They can share the ball. They are poetic to watch. Well, there you go. There's your Friday forecast.
I got to get my score, though.
Oh, give me your score.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to go Golden State. Let's go 125 to 110.
Okay, so 15-point win. Yeah.
And
cover.
Hit the over.
And
yeah.
The over.
Yep.
All right. It's Danny Burke, or Danny Casino, as he's known for. Chris Schmidt, that's the Friday forecast. Our picks are for entertainment purposes only. Between 6 and 8 million Americans meet the criteria for gambling addiction, and many more affected by an individual's gambling problem. If you have a gambling problem, it's not a moral weakness or a bad habit. It's a serious condition. If you have someone you love that has a gambling problem, call the Choices Treatment Center in Lincoln, 402-476-2300. The statewide helpline, 800-522-4700, with the Nebraska Council on Problem Gambling. A quick timeout. We'll say goodbye next on Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time on Hail Varsity Radio. We'll be back tomorrow morning, the weekend edition, 7 to 9. And a bit of news, my little boy is a huge basketball fan. I've made that clear. And he had a wonderful man as his head basketball coach for Small Fry the last 3 years, John Tucker of Waverly. He passed away. His memorial service was today. And Coach Tucker was just absolutely phenomenal, old school, incredible teacher, wonderful mentor, knew how to motivate, knew how to dedicate. He did that for 30 plus years with Small Fry Basketball here in Lincoln and was just incredible, man. I can't say enough about Coach Tucker and the love I have for what he did for Carson playing basketball. And I'm so sorry and sad for Coach Tucker's family, as we said goodbye to Coach Tucker today. Former Marine vet, was in Vietnam, and served his country, and served the community of Lincoln, served the community of Waverly, was the true value man up in Waverly, on top of the voice of the Vikings football and basketball PA. So, sad day, hard day, and so many of Coach's former players and so many folks around the Waverly and Lincoln and Small Fry community came out to say goodbye and send him off. So God bless Coach Tucker, and thanks for everything you did for so many families and so many kids. We are about out of time today. If you missed any part of the show here on Hail Varsity, you're welcome to log in and catch us on the podcast, hailvarsity.com. You can go to iTunes as well, and be sure to catch Danny and Colton's work from yesterday. Good stuff with Brandon Vogel and Mike Babcock. We'll be back here tomorrow morning at 7 for the weekend edition. Myself, Mark Kranak. Danny, thoughts this weekend? What are you doing? You grilling? Do you need a place to come eat some barbecue? I'm excited about that as we remember many this weekend, firing up the grill and spending some family time.
Yeah, I think definitely going to fire up the grill, looking to go to the pool this weekend. It's going to be a hot one.
I'm going to hit that, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to go swim at my folks'. It's the one place that'll let me have my shirt off in public. They have to. And that's where I'm going to be. So, yeah, okay. I'm anxious to do that.
Yeah.
You're looking good. Got a workout in this morning?
Yeah, that's right. I did my best as I could waking up. It's a little bit rougher in the mornings to get those workouts in, but
I'm proud of you, son.
Yeah, I'm doing salt dogs after this, so I mean, I got to get in, you know, when I have
fired
the free
up.
Time. Yeah.
You got to put your time in.
That's right.
What'd you do?
I did arms, so I did buys and tries. So,
okay. Yeah. So what's the Danny Cassino workout routine? How many reps? 3 sets of 12?
Yeah, I do like 3 sets of 12.
Do you max out? Do you go nuts?
15. I only do max out when I do bench.
Okay,
so, yeah.
Right. No, I hear you. It's about toning.
Exactly.
And when the lovelies ask you which way to the beach, you can go a little Chris Farley that way.
Exactly. That's what it's
hey,
all
Hey, have a good weekend, man.
You as well.
We'll talk to you tomorrow morning with Hail Varsity Radio. Thanks for your time. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great time with family and friends this weekend, and we'll be back to you tomorrow and Tuesday with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Take care.